Okay, so this afternoon, Parshas Emor. I want to learn the very, very end of the Parsha. There's an incident which takes place at the end of the Parsha with the blasphemer. So I'd like to learn part of these verses inside, part of these psukim, and we'll try to get a grasp of an understanding of exactly what took place here. It's on page 690. Okay. All right, bottom of page 690, last word on the page, the beginning of Pasuk Yud, verse 10. I guess the English really starts on page 692, 693 really. Vayetze ben isha yisraelis. So the Torah here begins a record of a description. The Parsha is not related at all to what we are about to learn. Parshas Emor begins with the description of the laws of the Kohan and the laws of the priests, the special requirements that the priest has as far as becoming defiled, ritually tame, and his requirements to remain pure. And towards the end of the Parsha, the Torah describes all of the festivals, all of the Chagim, Pesach, and the mitzvah of counting the Omers in this week's Parsha, and we'll have all the Sukkos and Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah, all of those are in there. And then towards the very end, you have some of the description you'll see on page 690, the top of this page, regarding the menorah, and the Lechem Hapanim, the showbread, is described. And then we get into this incident of the blasphemer, which is described, which we'll be studying. So the context is a sort of out of context of the descriptions of some of the laws which are being taught. And then we have this following incident. So let's learn the psukim and then try to come to a little bit of an understanding, if we can, as to what took place. So the Torah describes again on the very bottom of page 690, Vayetze Bein Isha Yisraelis. The son of an Israelite woman went out. So I'd like to read the first two or three psukim, then we'll come up with a whole bunch of questions, so you can sort of pay attention to where there are, I don't know if I'll use the word holes in the text, but areas where we'd like to have some clarification. So Vayetze Bein Isha Yisraelis. So the son of an Israelite woman went out. Torah describes this interesting way of describing he's a son of an Israelite woman, Vahu ben Ish Mitzri, and he was the son of an Egyptian man. So we don't give him a description as to who he is. We don't have a name attributed to who this person is. All we know are who his parents are. He's the son of a Jewish woman and the son of an Egyptian man. B'seich b'nei Yisrael, so he goes out among the children of Israel. Vayinotzu b'machane, they fought in the camp. Who fought in the camp? We don't have right at this point. This guy goes out. There is a fight. Torah says, who's fighting? Ben Hayisraelis, this son of the Jewish woman. V'ish Hayisraeli, and a Jewish man. Questions?
Is the father from the Arab love? Is that what kind of Egyptian?
Right now we have no description. We just have an Egyptian man. It's a fair question. As we have a Jewish woman, Egyptian man, they have a child, he goes out, gets into a fight, and with who? With another Jew, who's not introduced to us, with another Jewish man. So obvious questions, of course, would be...
Why do we not know who he is?
Okay, well, he's totally... Who he is totally left out. It seems only important to us to know... Not who he is, but it's relevant to us to know only who his parents are. Excellent. Another question someone mentioned? What are they fighting about? The Torah totally leaves blank this issue as something, some fight erupts. We have a Jew, again, this man, fathered by an Egyptian man and a Jewish woman, goes out. He went out. We'll add that to that question. The Torah describes this as Vayetze. The opening word in this pasuk was Vayetze, and he went out. Where did he go from? So he went somewhere. He went out, gets into this fight with another Jew. We don't know who the other Jew is, and we don't know why they are fighting. But that's what the Torah tells us. This guy gets into a dispute. Let's just read a couple more psukim, then we'll go back and tackle some of these questions. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayikov Bein Ha'isha Ha'Yisraelis Es Hashem. Again, this person described simply as the son of the Israelite woman, Vayikov. The sages understand that to mean pronounced the name. So he pronounces Hashem's name, the ineffable name of Hashem. Vayikalel. and blasphemes, so to speak. He curses Hashem's name. The sages described using Hashem's name. He uses that name to curse Hashem himself, as if a person were to say, sages don't like, we'll see why later, they don't, when they describe this, they don't actually, they use the word Yossi, instead of using Hashem's name. It's as if a person said, Yossi should curse Yossi. Yossi should curse Yossi. When, what the person really said was that, using Hashem's name, and as if Hashem himself, using that name, should curse Hashem himself. That's, but the sages don't want to even speak that way, so they use the phrase, like, Yossi should curse you. So he goes out, this person apparently, he lost the fight, that's what it would seem like, goes out and blasphemes God. So they bring him to Moshe, look what this person did, he curses Hashem, using Hashem's name himself. V'shem imo Shlomis bas divri lemate don. And now we introduce who his mother is. We still don't give him a name. That seems irrelevant. We give his mother a name, Shlomis bas divri lemate don. So from the tribe of Don, there was a woman named Shlomis bas divri. She is apparently this Jewish woman who had a son with an Egyptian man. This kid grows up, gets into a fight, apparently loses the fight. We still don't know whether or not this was a fist fight or an emotional halachic fight, but there was clearly a dispute. He loses, goes out, curses God. People take him to Moshe and they say, what should we do with him? Vayanichuhu b'mishmar. So they placed him under guard, lifrosh lehem al pi Hashem, to clarify exactly what they should do. Rashi will explain, they didn't know what to do with him. They didn't yet know what exactly is a punishment for somebody who was to do something like this. So they took him, they put him away, and then the Torah will later describe exactly the death penalty is in order over here, and they stoned him and put him to death. Alright, difficult set of three psukim. Exactly what took place, again, the questions which we've raised. What was the fight about? Why does he respond as he does? And who is this person? Okay, there are a lot of Rashis. I'm going to go a little bit out of order, but let's just try to work this through. So the first thing that I want to learn is a Rashi. Rashi says on the phrase, V'shem imo Shlomis bas divri, the mother of this child, her name was Shlomis bas Divri. So I'm going to read it inside. It's five lines from the bottom of the first column, if you'd like to follow inside. Rashi says, V'shem imo Shlomis bas Divri, Shvachon shel Yisrael. This is being described. The reason why the Torah lists who his mother is in praise of the Jewish people. I want you to know, says the Torah, who this woman was. Shapir Suma HaKosav Lizu. That the Torah specifies this one woman, Lomar Shehi Levada Hayesa Zona. She was the only woman amongst the Jewish people who mothered a child that had been fathered by an Egyptian man. After all the years of slavery, 210 years of slavery, the Torah actually spells out who she was. Rashi comments, this is actually in praise of the Jewish people, that she alone was the only one who had a child from an Egyptian man and not from her Jewish husband. Now, even though Rashi uses the word Zona, which would imply some sort of forbidden relationship, which it was, but it wasn't done on purpose. Rashi already earlier in Chumash told us exactly what took place here, which you may or may not recall, but if you'll flip to page 298, I'll just take you back a little bit, just to give the context of the story, which will be relevant as well. 298 is in the middle of Parsha Shmos, which is in our introduction to the Jewish people in the land of Mitzrayim. And the Torah says in the very beginning, on the top of the page, Moshe, who is growing up in the palace of Paro, grows up by Yetze El Echov. He goes out to his brothers to see what's going on with the Jewish people in the midst of their slavery. And he sees, Pasuk Yud Aleph says, an Ish Mitzri. Remember that phrase, Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian man, the same exact phrase that we have from our pasuk, and ish mitzri make ish ivri me'achav. There's an Egyptian man beating up on a Jewish man. Moshe turns this way and that way, sees that nobody is looking, and kills the Egyptian man using Hashem's name. What's the story? Why is this Egyptian man beating up on this Jewish man in this particular instance that Moshe feels it necessary to kill him? What's going on over here? Rashi comments. If you look at Rashi five lines down in in the first column, Maki Ish, every beating up on a Jewish man, Rashi comments, Malkehu Virodeo, he was beating him up to a pulp. Uba'alo shel Shlomis Bas Divri Haya. This man that was being beaten up is none other than the husband of Shlomis Bas Divri. Who's Shlomis Bas Divri? That's the same woman who is the mother of this child, right? What's the story, says Rashi? Noson Einov Ba, this Egyptian man set his eyes literally on her. Took a liking to her. We'll see in a minute why he particularly took a liking to this, one step at a time. But this Egyptian man took a liking to this Jewish woman. So at night, he storms in the middle of the night and says, Jew, out to work, and sends the husband out to the fields. And then the Egyptian man comes back in the dark of night, Uvo al ishto, and has a relationship with his wife, where the woman thinks this is her husband returning from the fields, when instead it was the Egyptian man who had sent the husband out, and he himself stood in the husband's place. Kasvur shuhubal, and the woman thought this was her husband. When the husband came home, however, he became aware of the fact of what took place. So Mitzri shehirgish badavar, when the Mitzri saw that the Jew figured out what he had done, Hayamakeo Virodeo Kol Hayom. So then the Mitzri used to beat up on the Jew all day long. Now, exactly opposite usually happens. The Jew figured out what the Mitzri did. So what's the Mitzri's response? So he starts beating up on him. This is the story. This is the child that's born when the Torah later describes there was a Ben HaYisraelis who was the son of an Ish Mitzri. Who's the Ish Mitzri? The same Ish Mitzri, using that same phrase that the Torah describes earlier. This is the product of that relationship. This is their son. This is the same Mitzri that Moshe kills, because when Moshe goes out, he sees the Mitzri beating up on the Jewish husband of Shlomis Bas Divri. Moshe sees him beating up on him. Moshe kills the Mitzri, buries him in the sand, and that part of the story we know. Later, this character comes back up in the end of Sefer Vayikra. In our parsha, this son grows up and gets into a fight, eventually curses God, but he is the product of that union of the Mitzri and Shlomis Bas Divri. Why did the Mitzri have particular eyes for Shlomis Bas Divri? So Rashi comments back by us on 692. That's the end. That's all we're going to look at from Parshas Rosh. If you flip back to 692, on the four lines from the bottom, the last line in Rashi Shlomis, Rashi says, "Dehavis pitpama sholem alecha, sholem alecha, sholem alecha." Why Shlomis? She was fond of always saying, "Hi, shalom aleichem, shalom aleichem. How are you? How are you? How are you? How are you?" Mipat pepes. Mipat petes bedvarim shalos b'sholom hakol. She was She was all over the place. She wanted to know what was going on with everybody, asking everybody how they were. So she was out and about talking with everybody. So she had distinguished herself as a person who likes to be out schmoozing. The Mitzri took notes of her. He found eyes for her. Takes her husband, and the whole story develops. So that's how all. That's what this. So her name was Shlomis Bas Divri. There's another Rashi, the Maral quotes another statement from the word Divri as well, from Dibor. She was speaking with everybody. So because she was out, right, David HaMelech in Tehillim and Psalm says the Kvuda Bas Melech is Pnima, the honor of the king's daughter is inside, and she was out schmoozing it up with everybody. The Mitzri sees her, takes note, sends her husband out. They have a child. Mitzri ends up dying. But that's the context of who it is that we're talking about. Okay, so far so good. So that's our fellow. Now, we don't name him. He's not given a name. All that we need to know is that he is the product of this Jewish woman and this Egyptian man who is now dead because Moshe kills him back in Mitzrayim. Okay, now, next question is this idea of where did he go out from? What does it mean, Vayet say? The Torah describes this fight, which we don't know again. We'll put those two questions together. What are they fighting about? And where did he go out from that they got into this fight? So the sages have three things to say in this, which we will go through as well. Let's read Rashi, the big Rashi, but we'll break it down one step at a time. So the top of the page, first Rashi on the page, on page 692, Vayetze Bein Isha Yisraelis, Mehechan Yotza, where did he go out from? So the sages asked our question, we ask their question, what does the Torah mean when he went out? Rabbi Levi Omer Me'olamo Yotza, he went out from his world, left his world. On one level we could understand it to mean he left his world to come, he left his portion, he gave up everything, here he is one of the Jewish people, he left everything, he blasphemed God, curses God, he's going to be put to death. He left his world. Now we're going to go back to this Rashi to give another interpretation when we finish, but that's the first thing that the sages say. Rashi quotes, he left his world, he left his standing, left his position, left his place, to get involved and engage in this incident. Now the sages from here give two other explanations where they're going to go into what was this fight about. Where was the battle? Why did this begin? Why did this whole episode begin? So Rebrachia Omer, so Rebrachia says, Miparsha Shalemalo Yotza. You know what he went out from? What's the connection of this word that he went out? He went out is connecting the very last Parsha that had been taught, the last piece of Torah that was in the Parsha right before this. When I use the word Parsha, I don't mean the Parsha of the week, but the paragraph immediately before this, is connecting. He went out from learning that, and went out and eventually blasphemed God. What was the section right before this? If you flip back one page in 690 and 691, you'll see the little header on the side is the showbread. Now, what was the status of the showbread? So if we'll learn, just read it in English to get through it quickly. You shall take the fine flour in verse 5. Take the fine flour and bake it into 12 loaves. Each loaf shall be 2/10 of an ephah, and you shall place them in 2 stacks, 6 in each stack upon the shulchan, upon the table. And you put the frankincense, and that's the remembrance of a bread. That's a, now, that part we've learned before. You have the 2 columns of bread, 6 in each thing, put on top of the shulchan, put on top of the table in the mishkan. Now, there was an interesting facet of these breads, and that's described in verse 8. Each and every Shabbos, he shall arrange them before Hashem continually, from the children of Israel as an eternal covenant, and it shall belong to Aharon and his sons, and they shall eat it in the holy place. But when did they eat it? So they didn't eat it on the day that it was baked. They would eat it on the following week. It was out the whole week. A miracle happened that it stayed fresh. But they would eat it the week following its being baked, and then they would replace the new ones. As they would bake new breads, they would put them in, take the old ones off, which had been there the whole week, and then they would eat the ones that had been taken off that had been baked the week before. So Rashi comments from the sages, Vayetze, he went out from learning that halacha, from learning that the way that the process would work is that we would bake bread on a Friday and eat them the following week. So says Rashi, Lagleg, he started poking fun. Va'omar b'yom ha-Shabbos ya'archenu, you're going to lay them out and set them up on Shabbos. Derech ha-melech le'ech o'pas chamo b'chol yom. The way of a king is to eat freshly baked bread every day. Shema pas tzonena shel tisha yom in b'tzmi. You're going to eat 9-day-old bread. You bake it on a Friday, eat it the following Shabbos. That's the way of a king? That this makes sense? This is the law that should be kept? And in poking fun of the law that had just previously been taught, he went out and eventually got into a dispute about it, got into a fight about it, and ended up actually blaspheming God, ended up cursing God, and that's where it came from. So that's one approach in the sages as to where it came from. The word vayetze is connected to he went out from the previous law, which he had learned, thought it was silly and ridiculous, got into a fight about it, and curses God. And then Rashi says one other approach. This is one that I want to focus on a little bit this afternoon. Rashi says, "Umas nisam." He said, quotes from the Chazal, "Mi beis dino shel Moshe yotza mechuyov." He went out from the court of Moshe. What does it mean, vayetze? He went out. Where did he go out from? He had a court case. He went out from Moshe's beis din. Moshe, of course, had a court of law. Anytime a person had a dispute, they would come to Moshe, and Moshe would address them. And this guy, this son of Shlomis Bas Divri, the Jewish woman and the Egyptian man, had a court case, and left, was sent out of the court, Mechuyov. He was the one who was on the short end of the stick. He was found, not necessarily guilty, but he was found, didn't come out the way that he wanted. His position was not accepted. And he went out, and eventually cursed God. What was the case, Rashi says? Bo lita oyalo b'soich machane don. He wanted to set up his camp in the area of Dun. Each one of the tribes had a machane, had a certain camp. They all had their flags, and they had their area around the Mishkan. The Mishkan, the tabernacle, was in the center of the camp, and then the Levim surrounded that. And then around that, you had the 12 tribes of the Bnei Yisrael were divided into four sections, three tribes, each to the west, to the east, to the north, and to the south of the Mishkan. So this Jew came and wanted to set up his camp, set up his home, his tent, in the tribe of Dan. Why did he want to set up his camp in the tribe of Dan?
His
mother was from Dan. His father's an Egyptian man. He's not part of the Jewish people. He doesn't have a tribe that he would affiliate with. So all that he has is his mom. And his father's dead anyway, since way back when. I remember how long ago his father, right? Moshe kills the Egyptian before he even runs to Midian. Before he even goes to Midian, then he comes back, and we have a whole year of the play. So his father's been dead a while. His Egyptian father. But so his mother's from Dan. So this guy is now, we're right after Mitzrayim. We come out, we're in the camp, we're in the desert. So he wants to set up his house. Where should he set up his home? So he goes to the tribe of Dan. They say to him, what are you doing over here? You're not part of the tribe of Dan. He says, what are you talking about? My mother's from the tribe of Dan. I'm from the tribe of Dan. Let me in. They say to him, Ish al diglo the osos levesavosam. Each man camps by his father's camp. The way that we determine the tribes are based on one's father. Now, you all know that one's Judaism is based on the mother. Mother determines whether or not the status of the child is a Jew or a non-Jew. So this child, based on halacha, would have been a Jewish child because non-Jewish father, Jewish mother, has a status of a Jew. There's actually a lot to talk about there, because Rashi, you comment another Rashi, that he had to convert. So there's a lot of discussion why he had to convert, since he was born of a Jewish mother. So there's a lot of discussion about the fact that this was before Kabbalah Satorah, before the Torah was given, or all the Jewish people had to convert. There's a lot of discussion exactly about that. The halacha today, the Gemara is clear that a non-Jewish father, Jewish mother, child is Jewish. Which tribe is he part of? If you want to know whether or not a person is a Kohen or a Levi or a Yisrael, you go based on the father. So this guy didn't have a father. So the people of Dan said, this campment is only for people who have fathers from the camp of Dan. Very nice that you're a Jew and that your mother is from Dan, but you don't belong here. So what do you do when you have a dispute where he says, I do belong here, and the people say, you don't belong here? So you go to Moshe Rabbeinu. They went to Moshe's court, and Moshe said, the halacha is, you don't belong here. The halacha is, you're not of a Jewish father from the tribe of Dan, and this is the tribe of only people whose fathers were from the tribe of Dan. You actually do not have a claim that you could lay down your tent in this area. Amad v'gadah. So he stood up and curses God. So says Rashi, say the sages, what's the verse, why Vayet say? What's the fight about? And why was the result of the fight a curse? Say the sages, he left from the court of Moshe. He had gotten into a fight about whether or not he was or was not allowed to place his tent in the camp of Dan. Moshe sided with the tribe of Dan. The truth is it goes based on your father. So he stood up and he cursed God. People took him to Moshe and they eventually killed him because that's an inappropriate response. But that's at least the Rashi describes to us where the background, where the curse was coming from. Yes.
Where did they assign him at the end of the case to live?
So he doesn't have an assignment. That's what I want to talk about a little bit. Now the bottom line is, so this guy is pretty hard on his luck. And where is he supposed to go, bottom line? Where is he supposed to go? He didn't have a Jewish father. The tribes, the encampments were based on one's father. So he didn't belong in the tribe of Dan. Well, he didn't belong in the tribe of Reuven or Shimon or Levi or Yehuda or Yisachar either. So I want to share with you a thought that I heard from Rabbi Akiva Tetz. And he was saying it over from the Sichas Musar from Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz. And Chaim Shmulevitz was the Rosh Yeshiva in the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim in the early 1900s. They put together, he gave a lot of shmuzin, so they wrote him down. So Rabbi Akiva Tetz was expounding. I looked up the piece itself. Rabbi Akiva Tetz adds much to what he wrote in his own unique style. I want to share his thoughts. Now, they both presented differently, so I'm for sure going to be presenting it differently than both of them, but it's all based on what they said. How did he end up... This is a person who experienced all that we've gone through in the last number of weeks. He was in Mitzrayim. He saw all of the servitude. He saw all of the difficulties. This guy Moshe comes, says to the Jewish people, Hashem is going to save us. He goes through the year of all of the miraculous events of the plagues. He went through the splitting of the sea. He's included in that which the sages say at the splitting of the sea. The lowest of the maidservants witnessed and perceived more of Hashem than the greatest of the prophets. He was there. He went through it. He's in the desert. He's got the pillar of the cloud leading him during the day and the fire at night. He's there. How did he end up? All right, so he lost his court case. How does he end up in this place where he's at? How does he end up in the place of cursing God, using God's name itself, that which is punishable by death? What happened to a person who started in such an area and eventually fell so far and so fast to where he's at? So, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz answered, as explained by Rabbi Akiva Tatz, the key here is in Ron's question, well, where was he supposed to go? So where should he have gone? Good. He's not allowed to be in Dan. There's no option. Well, it was either, you know, Dan. Where is he supposed to go? And what they want to bring out, both Rabbi Tatz and Rabbi Shmulevitz, is when a person loses his identity, a person loses his place, he loses his place to where he belongs, when you're not rooted anywhere, you have nothing, you walk out of Beis Din and say, now where do I go? That feeling, that sense of being totally lost, of having no anchor in anything, is that point where you could say, well, I've lost everything. I have nothing. When I have nothing, and I sense that, and I feel it, and I feel entirely lost, then anything can happen. Anything can happen. You're floating. And when you float, you have no roots, no basis. So he brings a proof to this idea from the story of Rus. Coming up in a few weeks, we'll have Shavuos. Shavuos, we read the story of Rus. So if you recall from the story of Rus, the story begins with the family of Elimelech, and they travel. There's a famine in the land of Israel. So Elimelech and his wife, Naomi, and their two sons, they travel to Moab. And there, the two sons meet these two Midianite Moabite women, Rus and her sister-in-law,
Orpah,
correct. Both of them were royal princesses, and they marry into this Jewish family, Machlon and Kilion, the two sons. They both marry. One marries Rus, the other one marries Orpah. And as the story goes on, Elimelech dies, the father dies, and then the two sons die, so that Naomi is left with her two daughters-in-law. She says to her two daughters-in-law, well, I'm going to go back to the land of Israel. I have nothing. I came here a wealthy person. I came here with a family. I leave with nothing. I leave. My husband is dead. My two sons are dead. I have no more children in me to give to you, as was the custom. If she were to have another son, so then the wives would marry that. I have nothing. I'm too old to mother any more children. Go back home to your father's homes. But leave me alone. And the Megillah records that both Rus and Orpah initially said, no, we're going to go with you. And she pressures them, and she says, it's really not worth it, I have nothing. So the Megillah says, Orpah eventually says, fine, I'm going to go back. And Rus clings to Naomi, and wherever you go, I will go, where you'll die, I'll die, your God is my God. And she, of course, becomes Rus, that we know, the mother of the Davidic dynasty. But Orpah turns her back. The sages say, Orpah, the word Orpah means the back of the neck. So the word Oref. Am Kshei Oref. You are a stiff-necked people. The Jewish people have described it. Am Kshei Oref. The word Oref from Orpah, same root, is the back of stiff-necked, back of the neck. The sages say that when she turns her back on Naomi and on Rus and returns to her land of Moab, the way they describe her behavior that evening is really pretty indescribable. The place to which she fell, the acts to which she engaged in, are pretty barbaric and indescribable. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz writes what happened to her is the same idea as what happened to this fellow. Here we have a person who had a new identity. She had become part of the Jewish people. She had become part of this family. And now when Naomi says, I have nothing, I'm going back home, she says, you know, don't come with me. When she agrees and says, okay, I won't, she's now left with nothing. I'm now new. I've rejected my previous home. I've left them. I've entered this new family. And now they've, so to speak, rejected me or told me there's nothing for me, leave. When I can't do what Rus did, Rus says, I don't care. You have nothing. I'm going to stay with you. I'll be with you. I'll die with nothing with you, whatever. When Orpah says, no, I'm not going to take that path. So then, well, I've rejected this path. I've rejected that path. And now I have nothing. I have no path. I have nothing. When a person is left in that state, in a place where they don't have anything, so then you can fall from the highest of heights to the lowest of lows in a snap of a finger, because there's nothing rooting you to anything that says, this is what you need to latch onto, this is what you need to be a part of, this is going to give you that anchor, and without that, anything can happen.
I'm really troubled by this. I don't understand why the people of Dan could not have said, halachically, you have no place with us, but we welcome you. You come and live here. There may be certain things that you're not entitled to legally because you're not part of us, but to take him to court over it, it's like they caused his death.
That's correct. So, I didn't want to get into this. I think the answer to it's worth, once you bring it, it's a fair point. In other words, this, besides from making this fellow look pretty bad, like, what's with the people have done? Like, was real estate, like, they're in a desert, right? There's like a lot of area. Real estate was such they couldn't have another guy with his tent in their camp. They took him to court and they said, get out. So I don't know that the approach was, no, they took their encampment and their tribe seriously, and we don't appreciate that because today we're all just Jews. I don't know that that's the response. That might have been the response. But Pransky shared with me this morning that in fact that's not at all what happened. It's not at all what happens, and I hope I'll say this over well. What he shared with me, it's a beautiful thought that he didn't quote it from. It's probably his own, but I don't know if he saw it somewhere for his own thought. If you go back, well, like, refocus on what took place there. Who did he get into a fight with? Who did this son of the Israelite woman, Shlomis Pastivri, and a Jewish man, who did he get into a fight with?
Son of an Israeli woman and an Israeli man.
Okay, but how did the Torah describe him? The Torah describes who he got into a fight with.
An Israeli man.
Right, it's the end of verse 10. And he got into a fight, the son of an Israelite woman, and an Israelite man. Now, Art Scroll, again, I like pointing out all the time, be very careful with the translations. Translations, by definition, are not true to the text, because they can't be. They're not the actual text. It's a different language. Look at the Hebrew phrase. Vayinotsu b'machane, they fought in the camp. I'm on the second line from the top. Vayinotsu b'machane, they fought in the camp. Ben ha-Yisraelis, this son of the Jewish woman, who we've been introduced already, we know who that is. V'ish ha-Yisraeli. What's odd about that phrase? There's a letter. There's an extra letter. No. Not the yud. It's the hey in the beginning of that phrase. Anyone familiar with what's known as the hey ha-Yidia? The identifying hey. The Isha, the Israelite man, as if we are supposed to know who that is. Not just Ben HaYisrael is the Ish Yisraeli. That would have meant he got into a fight with a Jewish man. He got into a fight with the Jewish man. Which Jewish man? Like, who is this person? I don't know. We haven't been introduced to him. But there's an Ish HaYisraeli. The Jewish man got into a fight with this Jewish, with this kid, this son. So Pransky told me, you can flip back to page 298. which I told you we were not planning going back to, but...
Egyptian was fighting with, like, back there.
Oh, so you're working in the right direction. You're working in the right direction. So this is the same story. So again, let's just read a couple verses from the top. Pasuk Yud Aleph from the top of page 298. Vayhi bayamim ahim vayigdal Moshe vayitei lochol vayar b'sivu osam. Moshe goes up, he sees his brethren. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri meyachov. So he sees the Egyptian man beating up on an ish ivri. Vayifein ko vacho. So Moshe sees this Egyptian man beating up on a Jew, turns this way and that way, Vayar ki ein ish, and he saw there was no man. Vayachas ha-mitzri, he kills the mitzri, vayitmeneo b'chol. Vayetze vayom ha-sheni, then Moshe goes out on the second day. Vihine shnei anashim ivrim, there are two Jewish men, nitzim, notice that word, Nitzim. Familiar? Should be familiar. That's right, someone's flipping back. How do we describe the fight on page 692 in our parsha between this man? Excellent. Same word. Vayinatsu. So here we have two men, Ivrim, Nitzim. So back to we're back in Shmos now, right? So there are two Jewish men. This is on day two. Moshe goes out and he finds two Jewish men are fighting. Vayomer l'rosha lama sakereyacha, why are you beating up on your friend? He says to one Jew to next Jew, why are you hitting each other? Vayomer misamcha l'ish sar v'shoifet aleinu. They say, who are you to tell us, you know, who made you in charge? Halahargenu ato omer kasher harakta samitzra, are you going to kill us the way you killed the Egyptian? Vayira Moshe became fearful. Vayomer achein noda hadavar. Apparently the matter is known. What does it mean the matter was known? People found out that he didn't. Only they found out. So I ask you a question. Moshe, before killing the Mitzri, the Torah says, looked this way and that way, and he saw ki ein ish, there is no one there, so he kills him. How did anyone find out about this? Somebody was there. Right? One person was there. Who was there? The husband of Shlomo's Bas Divri. He was the one being beaten up. So Moshe might have looked this way and that way and saw that nobody was there, but the Mitzri was beating up on the Jew. So who was the Jew? The husband of Shlomis Bas Divri, the man who was sent out, and then the Egyptian guy, right, his son, but it's his wife's son. Mm-hmm. He was there, so he was one of the two people fighting the following day. That it's become known, and that they're talking kind of people, that these are people who are spreading words, because the next pasuk says Pharaoh found out already. He was the one who was there. Who were the two people fighting the following day? But who are those two Jews fighting the next day? Who were those two Jews in there fighting? Anyone who they were? They were Dasam va'Aviram. Two characters of Dasam va'Aviram. How do we know that they were Dasam va'Aviram? So Rashi says, not here, Rashi says, every time you find the word Nitzim, that word is always fighting, and it's always Dasam va'Aviram. So Dasam va'Aviram were the ones fighting the following day. One of the two of them, I don't know which one it was, one of the two of them was the actual husband of Shlomis Bas Divri, and it was his wife's kid who was the one who gets into this fight. So the same thing, Vayinatsu, they got into a fight. Rashi, whenever you find the word Vayinatsu, it's Dasam va'Aviram. They were the ones who got into the fight years later, not so many years later, but it was, you know, years later, with this, what would we call him? His, not quite, I guess, sort of, whatever it would be, his wife's son, got into the fight years later. Did I lose anybody? Am I making, is this clear?
I'm sorry.
who are Dosan?
Dosan Vavirim are two Jews, Dosan. Two wicked Jews who are pop up throughout the story of the desert, causing all sorts of trouble. They are always affiliated with that word fighting, Vayinatsu. Yes. And they were the ones, one of them at least, was the husband of Shlomis Bas Divri, who had been sent out to the fields, and he was the only one who would have known that Moshe had killed his Mitzri antagonist, the one who was antagonizing himself, and he was the one fighting the following day with the Jew, and he is the one.
Do we know why they were fighting?
No.
That's right. We don't know why they were fighting.
No, we don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Somebody knows, but I don't know. I don't like to speak for everybody. We don't know that. try to hold myself back from making such global statements. Okay, so said Rabbi Pransky to me this morning, Dosan or Avim, whoever it was, is the one who started up the fight. When the pasuk says "Vayinotzu v'machana ben Yisraelis," back on 692, when there was a fight in the camp between this son of the Jewish women, Ve'ish HaYisraeli, who is the Ish HaYisraeli? That is the person, the one that you know about from our previous discussion, the only one who knew about this kid's father as being the one who had fathered the child, and then Moshe then saw them, he was beating up on him, and Moshe killed him. Why was he kicking up a fight? He didn't want him to have a portion in the camp of Dan. He wanted to protect and say, you know, my wife, who had this relationship with this Mitzri and fathered this son, you're not part of Klal Yisrael. You came from an Egyptian father. You were the one the one Jewish woman who had a relationship with an Egyptian man, and he, this guy's always causing fights, was the one saying, my wife, he was the one who said, I don't want you being part of this. So that it wasn't the people of Dan who kicked up a fight and said, get out of our camp. It was the Ish HaYisraeli who got into the fight with him, saying, you're out. You're an illicit child, not part of the Jewish people, not from a Jewish father. You're the only one. Get out of the camp. Now, the truth was, he was correct, because the encampments go based on the father. Did the people of Dan have the right to say, it's fine, we welcome him? They could have done that, and they might have. But the one who kicked him out and took him to court, said Rabbi Pransky, was not the people of Dan. It was the Ish HaYisraeli, Dosan or Avin, whichever one it was, of those two, who said, I don't want you to be part of this. Vayinotsu, that language of fighting, which Rashi says is always a reference to Dosan or Aviram. And when he came out of court, Chayiv, that he was Magadif, he blasphemed God because of all that. Now, that would be an answer to your question. That's what Rabbi Pransky shared with me this morning. It was a source of that.
Are you going when Moses backed this?
Moses was teaching what the halacha was. The halacha is the encampment scope, your appropriate camp is based on your father, not based on your mother.
His hand was forced. I mean, he couldn't say anything else.
Who, Moshe?
Mm-hmm.
That was the halacha. Yeah. The halacha is, you know, the people of Dan, I don't know whether or not the people of Dan would have then said, I don't know whether or not there was a law that says you have to be, I don't know. But the halacha is, he didn't have a right to be there because it goes based on the father. That's the halacha, it goes based on the father. This unfortunate soul didn't have a Jewish father. But that's the halacha which described when, you know, if a person from the Shevet of Reuven marries a woman from the Shevet of Zvulun, where does the child go? It goes based on the father, not based on the mother.
Where did all the Geirim go that came with this era of Rav? Where were they?
Right, I guess maybe that's where he should have gone. He should have gone to their camp. He should have gone to the camp of the converts. And they were probably outside of the camp. You know, you had the 12 tribes, and outside of that was that separate thing. Mm-hmm. Probably. So I wanted to share with you one last thought that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz brings. So what does a person do as they begin to fall? They lose their footing. They find that whatever it was that they had known, their place of origin, wherever they had been accustomed to, they're losing. So we see that what that allows for a person often to do is to drop from the highest of the heights to the lowest of the low very quickly, because you lose a sense of being anchored. So he quotes a response to that is from a fascinating Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara there is discussing Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. And the Gemara describes, is talking about the mistake that King Solomon made. The mistake that he made, of course, was marrying too many wives. The Torah explicitly says not to marry more, that a king is not allowed to be marbe lo nashim, not allowed to have too many wives. The sages describe as being 18. 18 you can handle, more than 18. Absolutely. It's actually a dispute there in the Talmud if it's 18 or 6, exactly how many it is. But he had many more than that. He had 1,000 wives. The Gemara... I mean, that's from your perspective, imagine from like a man's perspective. So the Gemara actually uses that as an example as to why the Torah, or why we're not allowed to look into the reasons why we have certain mitzvahs, because in only one or two occasions the Torah itself actually brings the reason for a mitzvah. In this case, the Torah says that you should not have too many wives, lest they lead your heart astray. And Shlomo Melech says, I am wise enough, I will not be led astray. And sure enough, he married too many women and his heart was led astray. So the Gemara says, I mean, that's why we don't look into the reasons. Because we don't want anyone to think, oh, I know the reason. And since the reason is this, that doesn't apply to me. That applies only to everybody else, not to me. So since even King Shlomo, when he felt that he could reason such and say, that reason doesn't apply to me, fell. So the Gemara says, we don't look into... you know, reasons, things that we can learn from a certain mitzvah, lessons that we should take and we should apply, that you could do. But to ever say, this is the reason of the mitzvah, so that it would open up the possibility of saying, and that's why it doesn't apply to me, that we don't do that, we learn that out from Shlomo Melech. So the Gemara goes through, and Rabbi Tatz in his inimical way goes through in greater detail than I'm going to go through, the fall of King Shlomo, King Solomon, because of this. And the Gemara says, "Bitchila." Originally, Shlomo was Moloch al ha'elyonim. He reigned even over the upper worlds, the worlds of the angels and other things. He ruled over the entire world, not just the lower worlds, but the upper worlds as well. And then, following his sin, u'asof Moloch al ha'tachtonim. He only reigned over the lower worlds, but amongst the world that we today live in, he ruled over the entire world, not just the land of Israel, the Jewish people. He ruled over the entire world. Says the Gemara Basof, Lo Moloch Ela al Yisrael. And then, as he further fell, not only did he not rule over the upper worlds, not only did he not rule over the entire lower world, he only ruled over the Jewish people. Uvasof, Lo Moloch Ela al Yerushalayim. And then, as things further fell, he only ruled over the city of Yerushalayim. Ulvasof lo malach ela al mitaso. He only ruled over his own bed. Ulvasof, and at the end says the Gemara, lo malach ela al machlo. He only ruled over his staff. Difficult Gemara. The meaning of that is beyond us. What I want to share with you is what both Rabbi Chaim Shalom and Rabbi Taz point out. The last step of the Gemara says, lo malach ela al machlo. He only ruled over his staff. But what was his relationship to his staff? He ruled over it. That I'm a melech of nothing. I've lost it all. I was once king over the entire universe. The upper worlds and the lower worlds. I had that all. And I lost that. And then I only ruled over this world. And I even lost that. But I still ruled over the Jewish people. I lost that. I had Yerushalayim. I lost that. I had at least my castle, my palace, my bed. I lost that. And now all I have is the staff. But the way the sages describe it as, but he was melech. I still ruled over it. That sense of place, position, power, dignity, control. So I lost all that, but what I have, I still have. And I'll be a melech over my staff. And from that, eventually he rebuilt and he regained whatever it was. I don't know if he regained everything. He regained, it was melech, King Shlomo. But the attitude of when a person falls, that they only have this amount left. So they say, so I throw everything away. Or I put my foot in and I say, this is all that I have left, but on that which I have left, I have left. And I am a king or a queen over that whichever I have. And as a person slips, or like Tat said, that's life. That's ups and downs. As a person slides, it's a matter of, digging your heels in and saying, alright, what's lost is now gone. But in order for me to get it back, I have to, dig in my heels and say, but I'll be a king over whatever it is that I still am a king over. And whether or not it's only my staff, I'm still a king over that staff. I'm not willing to throw that away just because of where I've come. I always remember And I was in Israel for my years following high school. So I grew up in Cincinnati until I was about 7. So my parents came to visit. There was a family from Cincinnati that made Aliyah. We went out to lunch in Yerushalayim. This family from Yerushalayim. So this family was saying that someone in Cincinnati had stumbled or founded a company in the stock market or whatever it was. And almost the whole community had invested serious money in it. And at its height, the entire community had become millionaires in paper. The company had done very well. Everybody had gone in. Literally, half of the shul had become millionaires through the company. And something happened, and the company crashed. And he had 900 shares of it, which at its peak was in, you know, over $100, whatever it was. And at its end was worth $1 a share. And he told us, I remember the day, he said, and I sold it. Everyone else was holding on to it. At one point they put in tens of thousands of dollars, and it was worth $1 million. And now it was 900. So everyone held on, hoping either it would go back or whatever. He said, I sold it. Why? He said, $900 is $900. It bought me a ticket to Eretz Yisrael. So was everybody, you know, there was such an anger and disappointment of lack. I can't even believe, you know, 3 weeks ago, I was a million, and I have nothing. They couldn't even get themselves to sell when it was at $1 a share. I remember that. So I sold it. I sold it. So what was lost, but it's still $900. And, you know, it bought me a ticket to Eretz Yisrael. And it was, you know, right? But nothing. So there's an attitude that most people just throw. I can't even deal with that. I can't. It's lost for fallen. It's but no, all right. So this is what I have. Everything before that is lost. But you dig in and you rule over whatever that you have and you start anew. Well, so from Moloch El Machlo is an attitude. That's all right over my staff. It's an attitude that says even as things slip and fall, but I'll take what I have left. I'll recalculate where I'm up to. And be in control of that in order to be able to build for it. But those are some of the lessons learned from this son of Shlomis Bas Divri and the Egyptian man who went out and blasphemed against God. Wish you all a good week.